Louisiana.
Like most of you, I've been just assessing my 2017 and really kind of shifting my focus into what I believe, you know, I'm supposed to do in 2018. And a part of that assessment for me, beyond looking at just my goals and my timetable, is also to like assess my finances. You know, like I like to see where I spent my money in 2017, were my investments good, where could I improve? And one of the things that I realized in 2018 that I'm just gonna have to avoid are the three words, first month free. Because as I was looking at my finances, and my finances were looking at me, and I was looking at my finances, I realized that I am a sucker for subscription-based services. And they get me because it's free. And I don't know if it's a cultural thing, but whenever I see the words free, I just jump on it immediately. And I don't know if some of you like set a calendar for like the 30 days so that you know to go and cancel it. And is that what you do? You should have shared it with the rest of us, because the rest of us are out here paying for things we don't need. I've got iTunes, Pandora, Spotify, and Tidal. I've been listening to the same Elevation CD for 6 months. How is that possible? Netflix, Hulu, HBO On Demand, just all I see is free. And I, like the fool that I am, but God is working on, put my credit card information in there and say, you know what, I'm going to cancel it. God is going to bring it to my remembrance in 29 days. And God be like, child, I didn't have nothing to do with that. And so I'm going to cancel some of my subscriptions so that I can maintain my finances. I got kids that need to go to college. And I think that what they have learned, these subscription-based services, is that if you offer something to someone for free, they won't say no. They have no problem having an initial investment, because their hope is that when it's time to begin paying, that the conversion rate is going to be much easier because you have an idea of what you're getting. I call this concept from grace to grit. It's when God gives us something freely, like grace, but he does it because he expects something in return, and that's grit. Grit, I want to read you the definition, and they're going to kill me because I didn't send it to the back. But Kenny, I love you, and praise the Lord. Grit is courage and resolve. It's strength of character. As I was praying, I believe that God wanted me to really talk about the responsibility that comes with receiving grace. Most of us are so excited that we live in a space of grace that we don't give grit in return. What do you mean by giving grit in return? There is, when you have grace, there is an expectation that the grace will overwhelm you so greatly that it makes you turn from whatever it was that made you stumble in the first place. God gave me grace to overcome an addiction, so grit is checking into rehab. God gave me grace to end a toxic relationship, so grit is never going back. God gave me grace to get this job and have this position, so grit is strategizing and getting my attitude together and coming in every week, recognizing, but there, because there, but for the grace of God, I wouldn't even be in this room, so I gotta give grit. I gotta have this exchange. We want to go from glory to glory to glory. You want to know what the recipe is? Grit. It's when you put yourself in a position where you need grace again. So I was sharing with them that I started a blog, and God had grace over the blog. And I recognized that because he had grace over the blog, that I wasn't just supposed to sit there and keep writing in that one little space where I had become successful. That grit would require that I learn to hold a microphone and begin to speak to see if there was a grace over when I spoke. In spite of how nervous or insecure, how much anxiety I get when I speak, grit says if God gave me grace, then there must be something down on the inside of me that he sees that I don't see, so I'm going to have a little grit with this. Grit is hosting a conference in July because there's a grace over my voice and a grace over my influence. So I feel like grit is when I say, God, I don't want to just live in the space of grace. I want to live a life that requires more grace. I want to write the script and see if I'm any good at it. I want to write the book and see if anything comes to fruition. I want to live in a position where I feel inadequate and insecure and possibly like I don't have what it takes, because that's the place where grace falls. Do I have any grace people in this room who don't mind adding a little grit to the mix? God, if you open the door, I'll stay in the room. Maybe we should stop asking for the grace for the doors to be open and more for the grit to stay in the rooms once the doors are open. Give me wisdom. Give me character. Give me integrity. Give me grit. Make me become something I didn't even think I could become. Because you gave me this grace, now I'm curious, God. What is this thing that you're doing down on the inside of me? Why me? Why do I have this grace? I'm not trying to cruise on grace. Grace is not this license to do whatever you want to, but it is insurance that when you begin to pursue the things of God, that grace makes up the difference for where your ignorance is and where his destiny is going. Oh, they put it on there. Praise the Lord. So my topic for today is from grace to grit. And I want to start in Matthew 13. Verse 24. And this is the parable of the sower. It's not an unfamiliar text. Some of you have heard it time after time again. But as I was studying, I just believe that God gave me some insight about an exchange that was taking place here. So in order to understand it, the first thing that we have to realize is that Jesus is talking about the kingdom of heaven. He's explaining to the multitudes that the reason why he is here is to establish a kingdom. And the question, of course, is what is the kingdom? And so he begins to explain that the kingdom of heaven is like a man. God is the man who sowed good seed in his field. It's important to recognize that, because if you are not careful, you will not realize that you are seed. You're not just here randomly. You didn't just happen because somebody hooked up and bam, there you were. No, God said, in order for my kingdom to be established, I need to put seed into the ground. What am I saying? I'm not just Sarita's daughter. I'm not just T.D. Jakes' daughter. I am seed. You are seed regardless of what family you've been in, what community, what mistakes, what shame, whatever you've gone through has not killed the seed. You're good seed. The text said you are good seed. I want to take a minute and let that sink in, because it is the foundation of this text. You are good seed. Still. You're still good seed. You're still good seed. I know what happened to you. I know what darkness you faced. I know the disappointments you went through, but what I'm saying is that you're still good seed. How do I know? Because you're still planted in this earth. And as long as you are planted in this earth, then you are good seed. Everything about you is good. Mistakes are good because he makes all things work together for the good of those who love the Lord. Not because they're perfect, not because they do everything the right way, but because they are good seed. You are a seed, and you have seed. The problem is that most of us want to be fruit. We don't want to be seed. I want to be fruit, because the cost of being seed, not everyone can withstand. As a matter of fact, you can make mistakes in seed form that doesn't kill your fruit. But if you don't realize that you were just a seed when that thing happened, you won't realize that you can still produce fruit. There are mistakes and detours and disappointments and things that you have done and experienced in your past, not realizing that that didn't happen to your fruit. It happened to your seed. And still it didn't kill the seed. Seed is placed into the ground and covered in dirt, but it's still good seed. Seed is placed into the ground and friends walk away from them and they don't get the degree on time and they have to live from paycheck to paycheck, but they're still good seed. Seed is placed into the ground and it deals with divorce and it deals with abandonment issue. Life gets a hold of seed and it tries to choke the life out of it, but it doesn't realize that when God has declared that something is good seed, no weapon formed against that seed can prosper. There are some people in this room who wouldn't be in here unless it was for the fact that they are good seed. I'm still good seed. I'm still good seed. Depression almost had me. I thought I was going to have to check into a mental hospital, but God came through. And he reminded me that I was good seed. I'm good seed whether you love me or don't love me. I'm good seed whether you stay or don't stay. I'm good seed. My definition of good isn't contingent on whether you agree on it or not. God said I was good seed, so I have to live in the consciousness of being good seed. And I'm supposed to produce something. God has made me to be fruitful. You got to know where your seed is. The problem is most of us struggle. We don't know where our seed is. Verse 25 continues and it says, but while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. So we've got good seed in the ground, but we also have an enemy above the ground. Before the foundations of this earth, before you were even formed into your mother's womb, you were seed. But there was already a plan taking place above ground to make you wonder whether or not you had good seed in the ground. The enemy came and he sowed tares. I thought this was so interesting because I thought if the enemy was really after the seed, if he really wanted to mess things up for the owner of the field, why didn't he just remove the seed? Why didn't he remove the seed? But I believe that what God does, no enemy can touch. So instead, the enemy tried to confuse the seed. You see, the reality is I don't have to uproot your gift. I don't have to change your voice. I don't have to change your creativity. All I have to do is sow enough doubt and enough confusion and enough issues in your life to make you wonder whether or not the good seed is still inside of you. Some of you can't find your seed, but you can find your enemy. And if you can find your enemy, you can find your seed. Because the enemy is always going to be at war for what is going to produce fruitfulness in the earth. Can't find my seed, but I could find my enemy. If I would have known that, then I would have realized when I was in toxic relationship after relationship that God was going to do something in my heart that established a relationship with me and my husband that would inspire restoration and hope in the hearts of millions of people. But I didn't know I had seed. I feel that for somebody. You may not know what your seed is, but I'm telling you, if you were battling with any enemy, any giant, any Goliath of any size, then I'm telling you that your seed is right behind that enemy, that your seed is somewhere in the midst of where you're struggling. You don't think you're good enough. You don't think you've got what it takes. That means that you've got exactly what it takes. That means that your craft is going to break walls and barriers for people who look like you. The area where you feel the most doubt and insecurity, that's where your seed is. You better mark the spot and you better start going to war over that seed. The enemy didn't know that I was going to figure out that he was trying to keep me from my seed. But now that I know that the enemy is fighting me over my seed, I approach things differently. I don't just pop off like I used to because I recognize I got seed involved in this. I got seed involved in this. You're trying to keep me from producing something. You're trying to keep my harvest from springing up. I may not be able to find my seed, but I can find my enemy. Verse 26 continues. It says, but when the grain had sprouted and produced a crop, then the tares also appeared. I realized as I was reading that they did not realize that the enemy had sowed tares in the field until they started producing something. Man, that's such a powerful concept Because anyone who has achieved any level of success will realize that you don't know who your friends are, you don't know where your tears are until you really start producing something. It's easy for anyone to have relationships and opportunities when you're sowing. Because when you're sowing, it looks like everyone is sowing, so we're all on the same level. But when you start to produce, it makes other people question whether or not they were really sowing. And all of a sudden, you realize that you were raising something up and they were hating on the process. I gotta say that better. So I'm not trying to ruin y'all's friendships for the holidays. What I'm saying is this. That you don't really know what you have until you produce something. So you have to be careful when you make decisions in seed form. But because the capacity you need in seed form is different than the capacity you need when you become a tree planted by the living waters. Amen. You need to make sure that the relationships that you qualify in your life, I know you can handle me in seed form, but can you handle me when I start producing? So the grain begins to sprout up and it produces a crop, then the tares also appear. So this is the bridge between grace and grit. So God gave the owner of the field grace to have good seed and grace to put the seed in the ground. But it wasn't until the seed began to sprout and produce a crop that we realized that somewhere there was a breakdown between what he sowed and what he had. Oh. I know nobody has ever been there, so I will testify for myself. I have had issues spring up in my life where I realized that what's happening in my life is not a reflection of the seed that I put in the ground. God, you gave me the grace to get in this city. You gave me the grace to get in this relationship. But all of us, if you've been here for over 6 months, hit this pocket where you start to wonder whether or not the grace was still there because for some reason things are springing up that weren't there before. I'm wondering if the grace is still there. And I realized that this is when the subscription ended. And it was time for the owner of the field to start investing in the thing that he received freely. So we're going to see it turn to grit in verse 27. The servants of the owner came and said to him, "Sir, did you not sow good seed in your field? Do not be surprised when those who are supposed to help you start questioning what you've been sowing in seasons." And it's no shade to them. Can you put the definition of servant up on the screen for me? Because some people we are so easy to cut off, but I think there's also this other type of person that watches us while we're sowing. Can you go ahead and put it up? Because I didn't memorize it because the way my memory is set up. I could read it off my phone. The people watching you work, you'll have to teach them to function in your world. So the servant didn't have enough exposure to recognize that just because they saw tares didn't mean that he didn't sow good seeds. There are people in your life that before you cut them off, you may have to educate them. I mean that with all humility. Y'all think everything I say is a read, but I really mean that thing. Sometimes the moment someone questions our work, we're so offended and so defensive that we don't take the time to educate them that, baby, this thing that I'm doing, there's warfare attached to it. It wasn't supposed to be easy for me. I'm not surprised that I have tares in my field. You just have to educate your servants. Because some people don't know what it's like to function in the arenas and the industries that you're in. And they think that the reason why you can't keep any friends is because of something you've sown, not recognizing that I'm not in a season where I'm even supposed to have friends. So I expect for some people to turn their back on me. I expect for some things to not work out the way I... It wasn't anything I sowed. This is just a part of the process. I expect for there to be tear. I expect for there to be issues. I don't expect for everything to start flowing the way that it flowed for other people in the promised land because I know the grace that is on my life. I know the seed that I have. It's so great that somebody's going to throw a little tear in it. When you got a good thing, you got to know that people are going to throw just a little tear in it. And you got to expect that and be ready for it. But more importantly, you have to realize that they cannot sow anything that kills your seed. No rumor, no gossip, no opinion, no dysfunction, no clique, no agency can kill your seed. You can sow as much tear as you want to. The most powerful lesson that my husband and I ever learned in our marriage is to recognize that we have good seed. And when we have good seed, we have to recognize that there are going to be times when the devil comes up against war for what we have and what our marriage represents in this world. But what we know is that we have good seed. When you have good seed, you learn to war differently than other people war. You learn to teach people, no, baby, this is a part of it. You don't have to shut down every rumor. You don't have to chase down every issue because you know you got good seed, and some things are just par for the course when you've got good seed. So he had to educate the servants. In verse 28, it continues, and this is where we see the owner go from grace to grit, because the first thing he says is an enemy has done this. You got to be able to identify where emotions and feelings and thoughts are coming from. We can't afford any longer to just let thoughts run rampant in our mind. Why do I feel inadequate? Why do I feel insecure? Is that God's vision for my life? Is that what he wants for me? Or is there an enemy somewhere that has sowed some seeds? Is there a bad relationship that I haven't completely dealt with that has sowed seeds in my life that is making me feel like I don't have what it takes? Instantly, we see the owner of the field give grit because he says, an enemy has done this. And the servants who he had took this opportunity to educate says to him, do you want us then to go and gather them up? Because now that they understand what they're up against, they can be a better help to their owner. Some people could help you better if you would let them know what was going on in your life. Some people could be a better tool and wisdom and resources for you if you just let them know what's going on in my life. I'm not being short. I'm not being rude. I'm dealing with depression. I'm not being weird. I've got an addiction. If you started to let people up, that's when the enemy really loses his power. When everybody gets on the same page, instead of being afraid and saying, oh, the one person who I was supposed to count on has now turned their back on me. No, before you turn your back, I just want you to know that I didn't mean to just be rude, that I was going through something down on the inside of me and I didn't know how to deal with it. And I let that thing out on you and I apologize, but I'm telling you, an enemy has done this. And when you do that, you will see people say, well, what do you want me to do in return? That's the kind of person I am. That if you tell me that the enemy is up against you, if you tell me that the industry is up against you, that finances are up against you, then I start saying, as a servant, what can I do to help you? Our volunteers and our staff, from the tech team to the stage, we don't come together just so that we can put on a great light show and sing beautiful songs. We came because we recognize that there is seed that walks into this room. And our job is to go to war for your seed. We go to war with depression. We go to war with generational curses because we recognize the seed that is down on the inside of you. Small groups all over the city get together because we're going to war over the seed that's down on the inside of you. When you get some real friends in your life, they start asking questions like, do you want us then to go and gather them up? Have you ever had a friend that when you told them what was going on, and you told them who said what about you, that they start asking questions like, well, how you want to handle this? You want me to go back? Because I'm here to serve what God is doing in your life. And I'm not going to let anybody rise up against you and make you believe that you are less than called. You just let me know if you want me to go and gather them up. I love to see my 1LA family gathering people up on social media. Not my first lady. Not today. The devil is a liar. Do you want us to go and gather them up? Lord, send me friends that know how to gather. Yes. not sit back and watch, not sit back and make a mockery, not sit back and gossip. I want some friends who know how to gather in prayer where two or three are gathered in his name. God, send me some people who know how to gather when life pushes me back against the wall and I start to wonder if I'm going to make it at all. God, send me somebody who knows how to gather and say, didn't you remember that no weapon formed against you would prosper? Didn't you remember that nobody can do that thing like you do the way you do? Girl, let me gather you up and bring you back in position. God, send me somebody who knows, who at least wants to gather. Not that I'm going to release them, because some of my friends can't be trusted to gather. But Lord, just send me somebody who has the heart to gather somebody up. If you are that friend, join One Connect so we can start a network. Friends who gather. Verse 29 continues. And the owner of the field says, no, I don't want you to gather them up right now. Because if you gather them up, you're going to uproot what I've planted too. That's wisdom. That's wisdom. What that says to me is not everything needs a response the moment it happens. What that says to me is, oh, give me verse 30 and then I'll tell you what it says to me fully. It says, let both grow together until the harvest. And at the time of harvest, I will say to the reapers, first gather together the tares up, tares, and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. What this says to me is that sometimes the best revenge is growth. That sometimes not everything deserves a response the moment that it happens. As a matter of fact, you can be so consumed with responding to something while it's happening that you miss out on the opportunity to grow. But if you would just wait long enough to let God continue finishing that work that he's doing down on the inside of you, it's going to be so much easier to separate the wheat from the tares. It's going to be so much easier to separate the friends from the fake friends. It's going to be so much easier when you grow a little. But it takes grit to sit there and know that there's tare in the field where you're trying to produce a harvest. It takes grit to navigate this industry and marriage and relationships and families with wisdom and strategy. It takes grit. You don't get to just do everything when you want to do it. It takes grit. It takes power. It takes strength of character. It takes courage. God gave you the grace to do it. But this message, this sermon, is about whether or not you have the grit to go to the next level. Do you have the consciousness and the nimbleness of mind to be trained and learned and groomed, to be humble and vulnerable, to admit that I am a novice in a new level? I was a master before. When all I had to do was sow the seed into the field, I was good at that. When all I had to do was go to audition from audition, I was good at that. But now that it's time for a 6 a.m. call time and I've got a producer I don't like and a director that I have struggles with, I was great at dating and sowing seeds and loving and holding hands. But now marriage requires a different level of grit. I've got to be patient and sensitive. Do I have the grit to receive the thing I'm praying for? For real. Like someone is waiting for 2018, like 2018 is just going to magically open all of these doors. If you don't bring some grit into 2018, you're going to be just as frustrated and disappointed as you were in other years. Because the reality is that when God invests grace inside of us, when we give him grit, that's when we really see him do the thing that he is best at doing. And that is taking us from glory to glory to glory to glory. And for me, above all, what I desire for us as a family is to recognize the power we have to take the grace that God has given us and to allow it to radically transform our lives. But we've got to be willing to open ourselves up. We're going to pray in just a minute. If you guys could just come play so that they know I'm almost finished, as PT would say. There was something about this text as I was reading it, and I saw the owner of the field transition from the person who had good seed to the person who had the kind of character to reap the harvest that comes with planting good seed. And I believe that what we're going to see before this year is even up is that we're going to begin to see that the seeds that we have been sowing has produced a harvest. Because we had seed in the ground. I feel like all 2017, for some of us, we look back and the reality is that we think we're limping into 2018. Some of us think, okay, we made it, but it seems like we barely made it. I don't feel that momentum that everyone else seems to have. And I think that's because when we look at our field of 2017, that we see wheat and we see tare. But I believe that God gave me this message prophetically because he wanted you to stop looking at the tear and to recognize that even in the midst of chaos, even in the midst of disappointment and shakeup, that you still produce something this year, that you produce a new version of who you are, that you produce a deeper relationship with him, that you produce some moves in your careers, that you produce, that you made headway this year. You're not stuck. You're not in the same place that you've always been in, that you made headway. And God is not a man that he shall lie. He didn't give you grace for 2017 to abandon you at the very end. You are going to finish stronger than you started this year because God saw the grit.
This is the 70,000 watt voice of the community. KAYT, Gina Alexandria.
Will supply. I believe tonight somebody just wants him to open up the windows of heaven for you. Let it rain. Send down your blessings, Lord. I just need you to move in this place tonight. I just need you to move in this place tonight. He's doing it right now. Hallelujah. Open the floodgates of heaven. Let it rain. Let it rain. Of heaven, let it rain, let it rain. Help me, somebody, say it tonight.
Open the floodgates of
to tonight. But I feel the rain. I feel the rain. I feel the rain. I feel the rain. Anybody feel the rain?
I feel the rain.
Anybody in this place, you feel the rain?
I feel the rain.
Is there anybody in here, you feel the rain? Yeah.
I feel the rain.
I feel the rain. Maybe you need to look at somebody and tell them, it's raining.
It's raining.
It's raining.
If I will lay all of my sin, if I will lay them at your feet, so I Love is in the air.
The England Air Park Baptist Church, 2520 Air Base Road in Alexandria, with Pastor A.L. Johnson. We'll be hosting our annual Love Night Banquet February 14th at 6 p.m. The theme, Love Is, from 1 Corinthians 13. The guest speaker for this occasion is Pastor Randy Harris of the Mount Triumph Baptist Church of Alexandria. Come and experience an atmosphere of love, food, fun, and musical entertainment featuring the Parkettes of Alexandria. The banquet dinner is $10 for an individual, 5 and under, free. Looking for that special place on a special night? Come where love is in the air. For more information, Mary Johnson is available at 318-730-1861. The England Park Baptist Church is another proud underwriting sponsor of KAYT, KQJOFM.
Looking for a beautiful place to live at an affordable cost? Well, look no further. If you are 62 years of age or older with an income of $18,350 or less, then St. Matthew Apartments is the place for you. For more information, contact us at 318-442-0187. That's 318-442-0187. A place designed for senior living.
St. Matthew's Baptist Church, another proud underwriting sponsor of KAYT.
KAYT. KQJOFM.
Your number one music station.
These are the hits.
Give it up.
Hey, what's happening, man?
Hey, what's up, man? I'm so glad to be back.
It's good to have you back.
I can't believe I'm with the one.
You know what? Somebody that's with all of us. You know, he that hath friends must
first show himself friendly.
All right. Well, I know by being in this place that there's a whole lot of people that wants to know who this friend is. Why don't you tell them about it?
Well, there is a friend that sticks closer than any brother.
I got a lot of brothers, right?
Yeah. You know who that friend is.